Welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton, last edition of the show of the month of March, and that means last edition of the show before we get to draft month. Still a few weeks away, but at least when the calendar flips over to April, we can say, hey, this is the month of the draft. I know we're all dying for it. The combine's over. Free agency is petered out. We're in that zone right now where it's really just all about making up whatever mock draft fantasies we can every other day and then debating them and arguing about them and things like that. But we'll actually have some real stuff as we get closer to the draft. But there is no shortage of things going on today. We got Jameis Winston going to 250 pounds. We got Blaine Gabbert, the backup quarterback. We got the league meetings in Phoenix. We've got replay being changed. We're going to talk a lot about that today. We've got Joel Glazer hinting at possible uniform tweaks or all-out changes. And when I say hinting at, all I mean is that he didn't deny that they could do something after this season. And we'll take anything we can get after looking at the hideous monstrosities we've been forced to look at for the past five seasons. So we got a lot going on right now here on the Free Stretch today. And so we'll just jump right into it. As always, first things first, if you want to email me, love hearing from you, okay? BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is my email address. Very simple. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Hit me up, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo. On Twitter, same thing, @BobbyGameDay. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, our good friends 1 mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. They're on the right side of the road, the east side there if you're going north, and just north of Hillsboro. They've been there for over 50 years. They're a mainstay in this community, and they've got everything going on right now because, again, we have flipped into 2019. There's still some 2018s over there, and they're brand new, and yet you're going to get a great number on those. And if you want to check it out, just go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. They got tons of stuff, both brand new and pre-owned. And whatever you get, you will get the new and pre-owned limited powertrain warranty that starts right when you buy the vehicle. It lasts as long as you own the vehicle, and that includes roadside assistance for up to 10 years. You've got oil changes for over a year, or for up to a year, where you get free maintenance and everything like that. You can bring it in. They'll do all that stuff the first year after you buy the car. 120-point inspection, the vehicle history report, all that stuff. It's all taken care of when you buy from Bill Curry Ford. And if you mention me, if you mention JoeBucksFan.com, if you mention the Free Stretch, you get the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing, which you can see. So go check them out on Dale Mabry, a mile north of the stadium, or check them out on the website, BillCurryFord.com. I've been checking lots of things out on the website at JoeBucksFan.com because it was such a busy week since last time we talked. Now, this whole thing, first of all, with the quarterback situation, there's no situation, but the Bucks signed Blaine Gabbert this week as a backup quarterback. So, good news, bad news. If you are looking at that front, and not that there was any doubt to begin with, but it's Jameis Winston's show. Ryan Fitzpatrick is now a Dolphin, and the backup quarterback we have signed is not the type of quarterback who's going to be pulling a Fitzmagic routine, who's going to be causing any kind of controversy or anything like that. Thomas Bassinger in the Tampa Bay Times, I should say, wrote an article about how the Bucs literally got the worst quarterback available, and Blaine Gabbert's numbers aren't fantastic. The reason Bruce Arians said he brought him in is because he has experience running that type of offense, and he has experience in general, which Ryan Griffin does not have. So while there might technically be a competition for the number two spot in training camp, it is Blaine Gabbert who pretty much is going to be the backup quarterback. Griffin could still be on the team if they keep three, and they might do that. I felt bad for Griffin last year. You know, toward the end of the season, that last game of the year, we couldn't have put him in there and let him throw a pass just so he could say he's thrown an NFL pass, because even though he's been in the league, he has not thrown an official NFL pass yet. Thought Dirk Cutter could have done that. It wouldn't have hurt anything. But, of course, he didn't get that chance. Will he get that chance at all? Maybe, maybe not. But either way, it's Jameis Winston. There's no, oh, well, we're going to go with Fitzpatrick, or what about the, you know, obviously, they've erased all doubt by signing Blaine Gabbert. Jameis, of course, you've already heard by now, says he wants to play at 250 pounds this year, and, you know, that's supposed to be good weight. I'm not going to get all wrapped up, oh, he's got to be this number or that number. I think weight in general is overrated. The number, I mean. You know, I hear so many people And it's not just athletes. I mean, I hear so many, I even hear dudes talking like this. Oh, I need to lose 10 pounds. I need to lose 5 pounds. Oh, I'm 180. I want to get to 170. Let me first, before I go off on a tangent here, let me tell you, you sound like a chick when you talk like that. You're a man. And one of my favorite websites is, or they don't really update it much anymore, but it was a site still there called 70sbig.com. It's a 70sbig, 70sbig.com. And it was like a powerlifting website, and it's got a lot of like inspirational stuff and some humor and things like that. And as a lifter, I always enjoyed that site. And the guy that runs the site, who I've had on this show before, Justin Lasik, he said, if you're an adult male, if you want to call yourself an adult male, not like a middle schooler or a toddler, okay, and you're over 5'8" tall, you know, if you're not that tall, it's one thing. But if you're like 5'10 or above, let's say, he's like, you should be 200 pounds or more. No adult male should be 170 pounds, he says. I'm not going to go that far. But the thing about weight is, it means essentially, I don't want to say nothing, but how you look in the mirror, you know, in your underwear or naked when you're alone, how you feel when you move your body, whether you're running or jogging or whatever, and your body composition, that's what matters. If Jameis Winston weighs 250 and his body fat percentage is 12% or 13% or even 15%, that's not that big of a deal. If he weighs 250 and his body fat is 20%, a completely different story, but the number's the same. And I tell this with women too. Like, women don't, you know, women think, oh, I just have to lose weight. I need to lose 10 pounds. No, you need to make your skin tighter. You need to look better naked in the mirror. You need, sometimes that does involve losing weight, but sometimes you lose fat and you build lean muscle. And guess what? Your weight might even tick up a little bit, but you're a completely different person, even though that number maybe didn't change as much. So don't get obsessed with the number with Jameis Winston. If he wants to be 250, or, and I trust his trainers. He's got professional people, both with the Bucks and his own private people, that can do these types of things. But whether it's Jameis Winston, whether it's you listening right now, whether it's me, whether it's a 20-year-old person in peak condition, or whether it's your 90-year-old grandmother, guess what? Every single person should have the same exact goals when it comes to this stuff, okay? I'm going to tell you what the goal should be, all right? Burn fat, build lean muscle. There you go. I mean, seriously, people really overthink this stuff, and they look at the scale, and they try to say, oh, well, I should be 185 instead of 180, or I should be 170 instead of 175. Screw all that, man. Burn fat, build lean muscle. If your weight goes up because you put on muscle, then that's good, okay? And if your weight goes down because you lost muscle or you haven't been eating as well and you think, oh, great, I lost weight. Well, no, that's not necessarily good. I can show you people who run marathons who are in terrible shape. They can just, you know, they can do it without keeling over, but they have no muscle. They're soft. And I can show you, you know, people who weigh 130 pounds or 150 pounds who are far from the ideal when it comes to, you know, what we should all be striving for. Build muscle, lean muscle, burn fat. Again, if you're a 90-year-old grandmother or if you're a 25-year-old professional athlete, it really shouldn't be, it's the same. I mean, maybe golfers or something, sometimes if you're too muscular, it's hard to get your, you know, your arms bent the way you, or whatever. But other than that, I mean, honestly, so if Jameis Winston goes 250, fine, as long as it's the right kind of 250. Now, his whole thing is, the thought here is that, well, Bruce Arians loves to send out, you know, you get five eligible receivers in football. You get five linemen, you get the quarterback, the other five guys, you can do whatever you want with them. You can put two in the backfield to protect, you know, a little extra help, tight end, running back, whatever. You can put all five up there and run them on routes. So Bruce Arians likes to get them all out there, which means a little bit less protection. His quarterbacks do get hit a little more. And so the thought is, hey, let's put some armor on Jameis so he can withstand that. And that's fine as long as it doesn't limit his ability to run. And I don't mean run upfield for yards. I mean run by time with his legs and still make throws downfield because he's very good at that. And in fact, his passer rating went under pressure this past season, and basically his whole career has been very good. It was in the top six, I believe, or top five of the league last year, and his passer rating, it's only like 5 or 6 points lower when he's under pressure than his overall, you know, when he's out of the pocket or out of pressure. It's like he's almost more comfortable under pressure than he is with a clean pocket. So for him, the ability to stand in there and maybe a guy wraps his arm around his waist but can't get the second arm there and Jameis just has to shimmy out of that, maybe something like that, he's thinking, okay, I can withstand this a little bit better if I have a little more muscle on me. And like I said, that's fine as long as it doesn't compromise his ability to move, because it's still a game of motion, and his ability to move in the pocket and stay out of trouble while still not actually running for yards, big part of his game. And now people will make a lot about, oh, well, that'll mean he'll be the heaviest quarterback in the league, you know, at 250, if that's officially what he weighs. And that's just a number he said. We don't know what the hell he actually weighs. But, you know, it'd be one thing if he was, like, way out ahead of everybody else. But you've got Cam Newton is, like, 245. And he's a little taller than Jameis, but 245. You've got Roethlisberger, who's played mainly, and he's been up there before, but he's at 245 officially. You know, you got Andrew Luck, Carson Wentz, they're all around that 235 to 240, excuse me. So we're only talking a little bit more. Now, if it was me and you just said, hey, what do you think Jameis Winston's ideal weight is? I would probably say closer to 240. But again, like I told you just now, don't get obsessed with 250, 245, 240. Body composition, ability to move. Every individual can feel it, how their body moves most effectively and how they feel and how it works better than anybody else. So I trust him. I trust Jameis. I trust the Bucs people as far as strength and conditioning. I trust Jameis's personal people. There's too much at stake here for quacks to be involved in this stuff. So I assume all these people have the team and Jameis's best interests in mind. Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. Elsewhere on the personnel front, you know, the Buccaneers, the league meetings, Bruce Arians did talk a little bit, and he talked about how Carlton Davis is starting at one corner, so you're going to have him. He says Vernon Hargraves, and the way they're going to play defense, Vernon Hargraves will be able to play to his strength of being in man coverage, rolled up a lot more than he was under Mike Smith. The quote from Arians was, quote, if we have to take Vernon and put him at nickel, he goes, I don't know who the outside corner is yet. Let's find a nickel, he says. So he wants to put Hargraves at corner and get someone to play nickel. He says if they have to use Hargraves at nickel, they got to find a corner. So yeah, it's probably easier to find a nickel somewhere, whether it's on your roster currently or not. And of course, with the draft coming up, there's a lot of things still left unanswered. But personnel-wise, it's like I've been saying on the show before. I mean, if the Bucs are going to be better this year, it's because they're going to be more well-coached. And the same people we've had playing here already are going to be better. It's not going to be from outside additions. And I've even gotten, I had Phil in Tallahassee emailed me this week. Emailed me the link to the article in the Tampa Bay Times. The headline was, Two Bucks Under the Radar Signings That Played Well at the NFL Meetings. And the article was about Bradley Pinion, the punter that they signed, and Breshad Perriman, the wide receiver they signed, who was a 2015 first-round pick from the Ravens, had some knee injuries, but he is able to stretch the field. He's healthy now. And the article is about how those two signings have been getting a lot of, I guess people have been talking, saying, hey, those are good pickups, which is great. But Phil in Tallahassee, when he emailed me, he said, and he emailed me the link with his comments, he said, so Bobby, we're talking about a punter and a wide receiver coming off an injury? This offseason's been a joke, man. And I told him, I emailed him back. I said, listen, all right, we already knew with the salary cap they weren't going to be doing much. I'm totally fine. I mean, every year we talk about all these free agents. How often are these free agents, capital T, capital D, the difference, you know? That doesn't mean I don't want to add a guy here and there that can help out a lot, but I'm not upset on the whole with how the offseason went. Again, knowing what we knew going in about what the Bucs' limitations were and what their capabilities were. And as far as the signings of those two guys, Pinion and Breshad Perriman, and Arians' quote about Perriman was, quote, everybody I talked to said, man, you've got to get Perriman. He was breaking back out, and I think that was one of the best gets we got in free agency. And they also talked about Chris Godwin, how busy he'll be. And Arians said, I think Chris Godwin's going to be a close to 100 catch guy, especially because I think he can play in the slot and never come off the field. So, hey, great. And Pinion, for what it's worth, is going to kick off as well as punt. The whole thing is to let's see if Cairo Santos can concentrate on extra points and field goals. And, you know, if you have a punter who can also kick off, and I don't know much about Pinion's kickoff leg or anything like that, but you know, it's supposedly going to be an advantage. Fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with signing those two guys. I get why Phil emailed me, because he is disappointed that they're the focus of an entire article that was written. But this is the type of stuff you see in the offseason. And as far as Pinion goes kicking off, I still think, I mean, I know highly specialized things are the way of the world now, especially with pro sports, but it still always baffled me that kicker isn't just one guy. Like, your punter and kicker, like, anybody who kicks the ball should be able to punt well and kick field goal. You should have one guy for that. He should kick off, kick field goals, kick extra points, and punt. Now, I read a book recently, and if you're a reader and a football fan, you're probably at least a football fan if you're reading or listening to my show here. I don't know if you're a reader or not, but it's called A Few Seconds of Panic. It's written by a guy named Stefan Fatsis. He's written a few good books. I've read a couple of his. Word Freak is another one about the world of competitive Scrabble, which was a hell of a book. But anyway, A Few Seconds of Panic, this is like 10 years ago or whatever it was, where they let him, Pat Bowlen, the owner of the Broncos, let him actually be a player in training camp. Like, he got to dress. He had a locker. He had all the equipment. He'd go out for practice. He even dressed for a couple preseason games. He never did get into a preseason game, but he was officially like a player with them in the preseason. And he wrote a book about his experience. It was really fun. I mean, like I said, if you like football, you'll have a great time reading it. And he talks about like kicking with Jason Elam, who was the Broncos kicker at the time. And Elam, you know, is one of those upper tier kickers who kind of was able to call his own shots and do things the way he wanted. And Elam didn't like kicking off. He said it was a distraction from his field goals and his extra points. And he said, people that make fun of that don't realize it. I know, he said, I know it seems, you know, away, it's just go kick off. But he said it makes a difference. And if he could avoid having to kick off and just focus on the field goals, he said that makes a big, big difference to a kicker. So I'll take his word for it. And if the Bucs have a punter who can do it, which means they don't need to get even a third kicker to come in and just kick off, then all the better. And, you know, we're going to hold Cairo Santos to that, obviously, now that he only has literally, like the old phrase, you only have one job. He literally only has one job, and that's to kick the ball through those hollow pipes. So, obviously, that'll be something we're all keeping our eye on. And then, otherwise, like I tell you, man, but it ain't going to be any big pickups or this or that. This is your team. The draft's the only other way we're going to add anybody with impact, and that's something that remains to be seen with the Bucks picking fifth, maybe trading down. I've heard, and Rick Stroud and other people, I've been reading, you know, all the rumors about this possibility, that possibility. You know, Gerald McCoy is not going to be here next year, and Rick Stroud wrote a column basically about how the Bucks have been ham-handed in handling that and waffling and making it sound like he might be back when they say, no, he's not going to be back. So is he involved in a draft day trade? Hey, maybe so. Maybe him. I'm not going to speculate on any of it because it'd all just be guessing anyway. But if they do pick at five, Devin White is a possibility, the linebacker. And I don't know. I mean, I love Devin White. I'm not against Devin White being drafted by the Bucs. The defensive line's been kind of neglected. And if this whole thing goes the way they're saying it might go with quarterbacks like Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, if they're both top five guys, then that puts, whether it's Quinnen Williams from Alabama, whether it's Josh Allen from Kentucky, or if it's Bosa, you know, I mean, whoever it is, there's mock drafts now. I mean, Drew Lock, one of these mock drafts had Drew Lock going number two with Kyler Murray number one. So whether it's Murray, Lock, Dwayne, I don't care who it is, but if you get a couple of these quarterbacks in the top four, then that guarantees one of Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams, or Josh Allen is there. Whoever the hell it ends up being, they're there. So the Bucs could trade out, but if they stay there, they're going to get a hell of a player in a position of need that they haven't had in a long time, that position hasn't been addressed in a long time. So I don't know. And that's nothing against Devin White, but, you know, I just feel if it comes down to pass rush versus linebacker, I want the pass rush. But, I mean, some believe if the Bucs pick at fifth, the pick will be Devin White, and that remains to be seen. So tons of draft coverage that'll be coming up the next few weeks, both on this show and all of our shows. Of course, the commission, Justin's going to have his huge draft party looking at Buffalo Wild Wings again, South Tampa. He's got the hotel rate. If you go to his Twitter feed, at Commission Online, you can see all the information there. Or if you go to the website, of course, joebucksfan.com, they're going to have discounted hotel rooms. I mean, he does it big, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. So everybody's excited. And the month of April is going to bring more speculation all the way right up until we finally get things going on that Thursday night, 4 weeks from now. In the meantime, wanted to talk about the rule change that's getting all the attention. There's always a few rule tweaks. You know, at the league meetings every year, they talk about this stuff, the league meetings going on this week. This one actually happened. Pass interference, or non-pass interference for that matter, are now reviewable plays in the instant replay system. They're not changing the instant replay challenge system. There are still two challenges for each team. The way the system works with the red flag and all that stuff is still going to be the same. But now you can say, hey, that flag you just threw for PI, I don't think you should have thrown it. I'm challenging that call. Or that flag you didn't just throw that I thought you should have, please look at that. Please look at what number 21 did to my receiver, number 88. And then they can say, okay, yes, pass interference, no pass interference. So this is getting a lot of play this week. I don't think it's a big deal. I think it's a good thing. I think that it's one of those things, like, you know how the world's always progressing. Like, there's always progress in the world. And a lot of times when you're against something, and I'm guilty of this too for certain things, but a lot of times when you're against something and it goes through anyway, then 20 years later, after things have been that way for 20 years, you look back and you say, I can't believe we ever tried to stop this from happening. I can't believe we were ever against this. Just imagine, like, wanting to go back to the old way. Imagine not wanting to have improved it. You know, that happens a lot. And I think this will be one of those things where after we do this for a few years, we look back and say, oh my God, can you believe that we couldn't fix some of these pass interference calls before? Can you believe that you just had to stick with it in the past whenever there was a pass interference call or non-call? And of course, Sean Payton was the one spearheading this effort. We all know why. His team was directly affected by it. Now, in the NFC Championship game this past year, that happened under 2 minutes. It would have been a booth review, not a challenge, but the booth review would have been an option, and they probably would have done it, and they would have been able to say, hey, let's overturn the call. Saints would have had the ball. They probably go to the Super Bowl. I mean, this is the thing. This is the reason why they did this, because, one, the coaches wanted it, and usually when it comes to these rule change type things, the coaches get told, well, here's how it's going to be. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we're not doing. Very rarely do the coaches push for something like this and get it, but obviously, with the impetus of what happened in the NFC Championship game, and it's always like this with the NFL, like something has to happen that's just terrible, and then we say, oh, we can't have that happen. You know, they're always reactive, they're not proactive. I get that too, I'm not even criticizing. A lot of times it takes something happening to say, oh man, we need to do something about this. But, you know, now they had that thing happen. It happened, and it happened in the NFC Championship game, but it also happened in the Super Bowl. And this is what I'm getting at. These calls are bigger than almost anything else in the game. And they actually employed, and I'll give the NFL credit for this, they actually employed win probabilities and used math and data, which I'm surprised about, because that doesn't seem like how the NFL owners and competition people would roll. But they actually looked at win probabilities. Now, win probabilities, for those of you that don't pay attention to this stuff, they're not exact. They make it sound like they're exact, but they're hardly an exact thing. There's no way to quantify a lot of this stuff. But it's basically, at any given point in the game, you know, down, distance, who has the ball, time left, score. Team A has a 70% chance of winning. Team B has a 30% chance of winning. Whatever it is, you know, and they can take every point in the game, every single play at the end of every play, and say, okay, your win percentage right now is this. I shouldn't even say win percentage. I should say win probability is, you know, okay, Team A's win probability is 58.1%, and then Team B's is 41.9%, you know, whatever it is. So when they did this research, they were finding that the win probability swings from play to play were the greatest on pass interference calls. And part of that is because, you know, one, they're just big plays. I mean, usually when you get pass interference, it's a downfield pass and things like that. But two, and this is another reason why I definitely want to see pass interference reviewable. If you're going to have the second worst rule in all of sports and keep it, and you're not going to bother changing it, and the NFL does have the second worst rule in all of sports, and that is spot foul for PI. It's an atrocious rule. That you can chuck a ball up in the air 60 yards downfield, and two guys go up for it, and one may have interfered or may not have, and there we're just going to drop a 60-yard penalty on something like, yeah, just, you know what, just take it up there. Just like you would have caught it, just take it. It is such, I still to this day cannot wrap my mind around how bad of a rule that is. And people that try to defend it, I get people all the time saying, oh, Bobby, you're a moron. If they didn't have that, then DBs would just tackle receivers if they were beaten. There'd be no, and it's not true at all. College football and high school football do just fine with 15 yards and an automatic first down for a PI. I don't see how it's so hard. But yet, we insist, hey, it's third and eight on your own 45, and you throw a Hail Mary into the end zone. Oh, a guy tripped. Their feet was an incidental. I don't know. I threw the flag, so we can't fix it. So, hey, it's your ball at the one. Just take it at the one. I mean, it's incredible that they do this. It's the closest thing to pro wrestling the NFL has. Like, it feels rigged, even when it is pass interference. Like, even when it's a good call. I can't believe we just pick the ball up and walk it all the way down to the end zone and put it on the one-yard line. It's atrocious. So, oh, by the way, if you're wondering, the worst rule in professional sports, because I said that was the second worst rule, the worst rule in professional sports is in the NBA, which has a lot of worse in pro sports, in my opinion. But in the NBA, when you're under your own net inbounding the ball and you call timeout, and then out of the timeout, you get to just magically inbound the ball from midcourt. Like, you didn't advance the ball in any way, but just, oh, I called timeout, so now I'll inbound from midcourt. That's the worst rule in all of pro sports. It's the worst rule of sports, period. But the NFL spot foul for PI is close, and it's pretty much one of the only things that bugs me every single time I watch an NFL game, because it always makes me feel cheated as a viewer, especially when there's like a really good game going on and a team's driving, trying to come back and win, or they're driving, trying to protect a lead and not, you know, have to punt, not give the ball back, and then there'll be some cheap-ass pass interference call 30 yards downfield, up, first down, we're moving them 30 yards, you know, like way down there, or if it's in the end zone, it's even worse. Just make it 15 yards. Like, pass interference should be a 15-yard penalty or a spot foul if it's less than 15 yards. But since we're not going to do that, you better damn believe we need to have every possible check and balance on these bad pass interference calls. And I'm not blaming the referees. It's a hard call to make. It's very subjective. It's not, was his foot on the line or not, or did the ball hit the ground or not. Those are objective, black and white. They might be hard to see, but at least you know exactly what you're looking for in rigidly defined terms. Whereas pass interference is not so rigid. It's got very, you know, it's very subjective. So yes, review the hell out of it. I don't understand what the problem is. And people acting like it's going to make the game take longer are wrong, because there won't be more reviews. There'll just be reviews available for more things. And I mean, this is going to change the outcome. I just gave you one right there. We all know the Saints go to the Super Bowl if we had this rule in place last year. The Super Bowl itself, though, it was a little more subtle, but there was a play in the Super Bowl, and you remember how they were, what was it, 3-0 at halftime. The two teams were going back and forth. It felt like the first team to score a touchdown would win the game, which is what eventually happened. Well, the Rams hit a deep route down the sideline. They didn't hit it, but they threw a deep route down the sideline. They were going to hit it. It was Brandon Cooks, and if you remember this play, Stephon Gilmore for the Patriots reached in with his hands and broke the play up at the last second. Looked like a great play in real time. Like, I didn't notice it in real time myself. On the replay, Gilmore clearly grabs Brandon Cooks' left hand, grabs like his left wrist, and pins that left arm. He couldn't get up with two hands to go catch the ball. He basically had to do a one-hand scoop catch because he couldn't lift his left hand. Clear, I mean, just clear pass interference on the replay. Hard to see in real time. So with the challenge rule, Sean Payton challenges that. They overturn it. Saints have first and goal from the one. They score a touchdown. We all know they would have. Now, would they have won the game? Maybe the Patriots come back and win anyway. But it's very, very, very possible, if not likely, that the Rams win the Super Bowl if they're able to challenge pass interference. Just as if it's a near certainty they wouldn't have been in the Super Bowl at all if their opponent had been able to challenge pass interference the week before. These are the most impactful plays in the NFL. So it is not a bad idea at all, to be able to double check them. Now, I still say the entire NFL review process is flawed. I've said every week since that pass interference thing happened, that if we just had somebody mimicking what you and I do at home, because we can always see at home very easily and usually within 20 seconds, just watching the regular TV broadcast, not even having any additional angles available to us, just watching TV, I usually know within 20 seconds, of what the call should have been, what just happened. We all do. The guys in the booth, everybody does. So why do we have to stop the game and go through this prolonged review process when we could just have an official upstairs watching the telecast? And you can give him more than one view if you want to, but even if he just has the telecast, and he can just buzz down, oh yeah, dude, pass interference, caught. You could double check every single play before the next play is even run without even stopping the flow of the game. And if you had a problem with it, you could buzz down and then whistle could be blown and they could fix it. Again, without the guy running over to the peep show and putting his head in there, or now they have these tablets which are like 6-inch screens that are probably grainy and have the sun glaring and the referee's trying to do this with 70,000 people bearing down on him and looking at him, and he's on one sideline where usually the players and the coaches are all looking. You know, it's utterly absurd when you could just have, I mean, I could do it. I'll do it for my house. Just give me a headset, wire me in, and I can say, oh, yep, that ball at the ground. Oh, yep, that was PI. I could do it myself, 20 seconds, much less a trained NFL referee. And that's what the AAF is doing. They've got the eye in the sky. What do they call it? The sky official or whatever it is? You know, not very hard to do. But if they're not going to do that, I at least want, I want checks and balances. Because I'm tired of 60-yard penalties in general, but I'm really tired of 60-yard penalties that shouldn't have been a penalty. Even when it's the right call, I have a big problem with the NFL's rule. But otherwise, I don't think this will be a big deal. And if you're wondering, in Canadian football, they've had this in place for like 5 years now. They've been doing it. Hasn't been an issue at all. In fact, they looked at the average time of game since the review, pass interference review, went into effect. And it hasn't changed anything. During last season in this Canadian Football League, there were 71 challenges for pass interference. 45 of them were for defensive pass interference, and the other 26 were for offensive pass interference. Of that, 22 of the 71 were successful. 21 of those, so this is just to give you an idea of how it's probably going to go, 21 of the 22 times that they changed the call, they added PI when they hadn't called it. Only once did they take away a PI that they called. So I have a feeling this rule is going to be used a lot more, just based on the CFL data. This rule is going to be used a lot more for times when, hey, you should have called that and you didn't. But when they call it, it's not going to be as common that they overturn it, if the CFL is any guide. And over the last 5 years in general, not just last season, 41% of all pass interference challenges, both for and against having a flag thrown, have been successful. So that's actually pretty high. That's a little less than half. And usually it's about a quarter of penalties they actually say, yep, we'll overturn it. Now, if you're wondering about time of game, CFL games averaged 2 hours and 50 minutes in 2017, 2:51 in 2018. And that is on par with what game times have always been in the CFL, even before this rule. So again, don't worry about the games being longer. Don't worry about issues with slowing things down. Just be happy, if you're asking my advice, maybe you're not, but be happy that we're going to have more of an opportunity to not have games, seasons swung on these atrocious calls. And there's a lot of bad PI calls, again, not because the referees are bad. I'm not bashing referees, but because it's hard. But this isn't a 5-yard false start. These are 30, 40-yard penalties. Sometimes they're on third down when a punt would have been about to happen. Instead, they keep a drive alive. Sometimes they give teams touchdowns. Sometimes they take away touchdowns. And if you want to look back at the annals, if I can say annals on this show, of NFL history, I don't have to go back very far, just in our own backyard, because I remember that day in 2010 when the Bucs were playing the Lions in Week 16, okay? And the Bucs eventually missed the playoffs at 10-6 on a tiebreaker to the Green Bay Packers, who went on to win the Super Bowl. And Kellen Winslow caught a touchdown pass for the Bucs against the Lions late in that game that would have won the football game. And if they had won the football game, they would have gone 11-5 that year instead of 10-6. They would have gone to the playoffs, and the Green Bay Packers, who won the Super Bowl, would have been at home instead. And it all happened because of one of the worst offensive pass interference calls I have ever seen on Kellen Winslow. Say what you want about Kellen Winslow as a person, but he did not commit any PI on that play. It should have been touchdown Bucks. The Bucks should have gone 11-5 and should have been in the playoffs. And I'm not saying the Bucks would have won the Super Bowl, but NFL history. I just gave you two Super Bowl champions that would not have been the same if they had had these this rule in place. I mean, that's two, forget about all these other games, that's two Super Bowl champions just in the last 10 years that would have been different if this rule had been in place. So that's a big deal to me. I mean, that's not just like, oh, we're going to try this. This is a sea change because the Rams probably win the Super Bowl if they have it. Of course, if they had it before that, then it would have been Saints-Patriots to begin with, and maybe the Saints, well, we have no idea. That's the point. But I can tell you in 2010, the Green Bay Packers would not have won the Super Bowl because they wouldn't have been in the playoffs. And we're still talking about Aaron Rodgers. Oh, he hasn't won the Super Bowl. Like, we're still talking about that. If this one referee in Tampa, Florida, in a game that nobody was really even watching, probably except for Bucks fans, because nobody gave a crap. But if that one guy, I don't even know his name, doesn't throw that flag for offensive PI, the Bucks win, they're in the playoffs, and somebody else wins the Super Bowl in 2010. Think about that. Think about how fine the line is, how random it all is. And I'm okay with things being random, but the things we can control, at least, we should try and fix. Think about, by the way, just as an aside, how different the entire future is if you can go back in time and change that PI call on Kellen Winslow. Because if the Bucks win that game, like I said, they go 11-5. They win. They're in the playoffs. The Green Bay Packers don't go. So one, there's a different Super Bowl champion in 2010. Two, Aaron Rodgers is still looking for a Super Bowl. Three, what becomes of Josh Freeman? Would that game have made a difference if he had a playoff victory under his belt? Let's say the Bucks go on and win a playoff game or even a playoff appearance under his belt. What becomes of him? What becomes of Greg Schiano? Was that Greg Schiano in 2010? For, you know, no, that was Raheem Morris. Excuse me. That was Raheem Morris. What becomes of Raheem Morris? Do we fire him the next year as quickly as we did? Does he stay? Does Josh Freeman? And then if we don't do that, then we have a whole other list of head coaches. Remember, everything about life is about timing, okay? So even if we still fire Raheem Morris, but maybe we fire him a year later than we did, then we don't end up with Schiano, we don't end up with Dirk Cutter, we don't end up with Arians. The whole line of succession is different because those people got hired at those precise times because that was the way the lay of the land was at that time. Same with the quarterback. Josh Freeman, does he go another year? Does he go? We don't know. A lot of stuff changed because of that call. And that's just one. There's probably a million others in all these different regular season games that I can't even count or remember or know about. We'll never know. Look, you only get to go through life one time. So everything that happens is done. And everything that's about to happen, we don't know yet. And the things that would have happened if something else that was done wasn't done, we never get to know. That's life. But we're taking a variable out of it. We're going to fix this. Now the next step is to, let's go. Let's make PI a 15-yard penalty. Let's inject common sense into things. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. A couple of other rule changes. And this isn't a small one. Blindside blocks, now completely illegal. Even if you do it legally, like, oh, his helmet didn't get involved. He put his shoulder pad right into his chest, clean block. No, you know those slobber knockers? It's usually on special teams, but not always. Those crackback blocks, basically, where the play's going one way and everybody's running to one side of the field, like on a toss sweep or something, but maybe that wideout comes back the other way against the grain and he just cracks the linebacker's ass, puts him on his back. Or on special teams, you know, returners running toward the sideline, a pursuer's going that same way, but one of the return team's blockers cuts back against all the bodies and just, boom, just finds some guy who's got his head turned toward the returner. He's watching him. His eyes are on him. Doesn't see the block coming and just gets obliterated. I, as a football player myself in both high school and semi-pro, have been on the giving and receiving end of blindside blocks. And let me tell you, all right, and some of you may have as well, they're so sudden, like when you get blindside blocked, like I've been running full speed just trying to catch somebody who was running toward the outside and just didn't even have any idea. And it's like basically running into like a like somebody put a telephone pole on the field and you just did, and you ran full speed into it with your head turned. That's what it feels like. But you're not expecting it, so it's actually not as bad as you think. And then you're on the ground. I remember one time I could not breathe. Like I literally could not breathe. And I was, because I got the wind knocked out of me so severe. I wasn't hurt, but I just got hit so perfectly, I guess on my diaphragm or something. And I was just going, you know, like, and like they thought it was something serious. They were worried about me. And I was like, giving the thumbs up signal as I'm like gagging, letting him know, hey, it's just one of those things, 30 seconds and it's over. I've had this happen before, but I know it looks bad right now. Like I was trying to say all of that with my thumb, and I'm just got my thumb up in the air and I'm going, I literally couldn't draw air in to breathe, to form words. And then I've been on the other side of it where, and you can see it developing when you're out there trying to block and your return man cuts it back or something like that or whatever he does. And you see all the bodies, all those legs just get stuck in the ground at once. All those people changing direction, but you're not. You're going to keep running full speed the way they used to be running, and they run right back into you. And you just, I mean, it feels like when you hit a baseball, and you know how when you hit a baseball off the handle or off the end of the bat and it doesn't feel good, you feel that vibration. But sometimes you hit a baseball, like right on the sweet spot of the bat, and you don't even feel the ball. Like it's just, there's no vibration. That's what a good blindside block feels like when you lay one. Like it doesn't hurt. You don't even feel the guy you blocked. You just run straight through him and he's just on the ground before you even realize what happened. It's a beautiful thing in a way, but it's also very dangerous. And I'm okay with them taking them out of the game. The Twitter responses were not good on this. Somebody said on the Twitter response, when I saw the tweet for the league, he said, quote, this is just a quote underneath the tweet. He was tweeting back to the NFL and the NFL Rules Committee. And it said, at NFL Rules Committee, quote, I hate you all. Blindside blocks are as American as the Declaration of Independence and hamburgers. And that's all he wrote. And it's kind of true. Like, if you think about blindside blocks, they don't exist in any other sport. And football is not really played anywhere else in the world. Like, blindside blocks are kind of a uniquely American thing. I guess hockey's got blindside checks, which they're also trying to get rid of. But, yeah, they are. And yet, when I drop this number on you, you'll understand why. 38. Okay? That's the percent reduction in kickoff concussions they saw last year with the new kickoff rule. Before, this is before the blindside block thing. That's starting this year. But 38% is what they saw last year, the reduction in kickoff play concussions because of the kickoff rules they tried out for the first time this past year. So guess what? The other rule changes. Those rules are now permanent. It's not a change, but that was a temporary, like, one-year trial. They like what they saw. So now, you know, guys not being able to get running starts, having eight players within 20 yards of the kick line, all that stuff, that's staying put. And again, the Twitter responses when I read about this the other day are all typical. Every time you do any type of rule change like this, oh, it's just flag football. I don't even know what football's supposed to be anymore. These guys need to put on skirts, blah, blah, blah. You know, every knucklehead response in the book. 38% reduction in kickoff return play concussions. Now, yeah, I like big hits just like you. But do y'all like football the way it is or not? Because these changes might seem like it's not football the way it is, but it's still pretty much football. Like, when you watch a football game, do you feel like, oh, it's not violent enough, there's not physical enough? Because it still sure as hell looks physical and violent to me. And yet, if they don't make changes, they ain't going to be football, okay? I don't think that's going to happen, but my point is, you just made a rule change that didn't affect the game all that much, really. Even though you might not like the rule change, did the game change all that much? No. And it reduced concussions by 38% on that play. That's something they can point to and say, hey, okay, now we can keep kickoffs. Now we can keep playing football. Now we can, you know, we don't have to, at least you got to do something. You got to meet people in the middle, okay? So try and think of it that way. Try and compromise a little bit and try and have an open mind, because concussions are a bad thing. Even though I love seeing big hits, I don't want to see anybody, even on the other team, get a concussion. And I don't want football to be under any more fire than it already is, because I like football. In fact, I love it, and I want to keep watching it. And I don't feel like anything's changed all that much, even though they've changed quite a bit from just 10, 15, 20 years ago. So if they've been able to do that and preserve the overall feeling of watching a football game, then more power to them. BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is my email address, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. I only have one more thing to say today, and I actually could save it for next week, but Joel Glazer, you know, the owners don't talk that much, but this was the league meetings in Phoenix this past week, so Joel Glazer was talking to the media a little bit, and he said a bunch of things. Nothing was really of noteworthiness. Except for this, he was asked about the uniforms. No changes in 2019. We would have already known if there were. But beyond that, possible. Quote, and this is about the throwbacks. We love the throwbacks. I know our fans love the throwbacks. We've had them several times over the years. We're constantly looking at them. It wouldn't surprise me if at some point here in the future, they reappear. Pressed further about the overall, you know, change in the team's uniforms, he said that was something that they're always evaluating. He gave a non-answer, basically. But he didn't say, no, we're not changing our uniforms, which is what I wanted to hear, because I hate our uniforms. They're an embarrassment. I think anybody who likes them has no credibility. I'm trying not to sound like one of those jerks who puts down other people's opinions, but if you don't have, not only if you like the Bucks uniforms, but even if you're just indifferent and don't have a problem with the Bucks uniforms, I can't, you could tell me 2 + 2 = 4 and I wouldn't believe you, because I can't put any stock in anything anybody says who doesn't hate just the atrocities the Bucks are wearing right now. As far as the throwbacks, and I hate even calling them throwbacks because they're just the Bucks original uniforms. You may or may not know, I've said it before, it's the most perfect sports uniform ever created by mankind. Like, there is no more perfect uniform than the white helmets, Bucko Bruce. The stripe on the center of the helmet matches the stripe on the side of the white pants. The orange jersey sleeve stripe matches the sock stripe. That color orange, I mean, it just screamed like Florida, Tampa Bay. And it's iconic. And if it had been up to me, they would have never changed it. I do not believe in tying a team's success in the standings with their uniforms. So people who say, oh, those uniforms represent losing. No, they don't. If the Bucks had kept those uniforms, they still would have won the Super Bowl in 2002. John Lynch, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, they still would have been Hall of Fame level players. Rondi Barber, we would have had all those guys. It still would have happened. The uniforms don't win or lose games, but they are what people identify with you. And the more you change things, the less of an identity you have. That's why uniform changes should always be minor, always be evolutionary. And even though I like the things they changed to in 1997, I like, and I would have been, they'd still be wearing those if it was up to me. But the thing with this throwback thing, even though I like those, we got the one helmet rule in the NFL. You can only wear one helmet all year, and that means the Bucks helmets are pewter. You can't bring in a white helmet to do the throwbacks. I'm okay with that, and here's why. All right, like I said, change is bad when it comes to uniforms. People should look at something, little kids even. 5-year-old kids should be able to look at a helmet. Oh, that's the Bucks, you know? You tweak it all the time, you wear this, that, and the other, you lose your identity. That's why the Cowboys star endures. That's why the Steelers, same thing. The Raiders, all those teams. It's no coincidence that the most iconic NFL teams haven't dicked with their uniforms every few years like the riffraff, like the trailer trash of the NFL does. And I used to think we were better than that, and then we became part of that. Don't be the Titans. Don't be the Bucks. You know, don't be these teams that are always, oh, let's do this, now let's do that. Stupid, you know, geometric shapes and just bullshit like that. Like the Jaguars, two-tone helmets. Don't be like that, and don't be like the people who like them, who wear jerseys to games and have calf tattoos. Don't be like that. Be classy, all right? Be iconic. Be old money, all right? That's what, even if you're not that, you should be looking like that. Be like the Raiders. Be like the Steelers. Be like the Colts. Be like the Cowboys. Those are the teams, as far as the way they look, you should, everybody should be doing that. Not these teams that change every 5 minutes or something like that. So I feel very strongly about it. And one thing I hate about college football, even though I love college football, one thing I hate about it, oh, we're going to wear white helmets this week. Oh, now we're going to wear chrome helmets next week. Oh, how about black? No, no, your helmet's your icon. That's your symbol. That's what they put up there on the screen, or they print in the newspaper on the back page of the paper when they put all the matchups, who's playing who. They put your helmet up there. If they were going to have the Bucks wear throwbacks and just throwbacks, that's fine. But what happens in the NFL if they get rid of the one helmet rule? All right? Hey, like the Eagles, we're going to wear white helmets with green Eagles wings instead of green with white. Or you know, any team. The Redskins. We're going to wear black. Oh, okay. Everybody, it'd be a free-for-all. It'd be like college football. And I don't mean that in a good way. So even though I think the one helmet rule is probably silly, I don't think it really makes a difference as far as concussions and stuff like that. If it's keeping the NFL looking tidy and crisp and clean, I am all for it. Not this slop crap fest you see in college football every week where you turn the TV on, you have no idea who the hell is even playing because then teams never look the same. teams have like 65 combinations. You should have two combinations, home and road. That's it. All right? And I want to hear from the Nuevo Rico out there who's, oh, Bobby, get off my lawn. Okay? Because I'm probably younger than you are, number one. Number two, okay, all these people that talk about, oh, this is the new way of doing things. You got to keep. No, you don't. People say that, and yet, same with college football. Who are the teams in the playoff every year? Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma. All right? They don't dick with their uniforms. They might have one alternate uniform they wear here and there, but the teams that change every week, like, oh, we're going, you know, these pants with this jersey this week. Oh, next week we're going to. How often do you see them in the college football playoff? So don't give me the crap about recruiting. Don't give me the crap about, oh, you got to keep up. This is what it takes nowadays. No, it's not. Never has been. It's a way for shoe companies to butt their ass in and use your team as a marketing whore. And teams can only do it if they let themselves do it and whore themselves out. And we already did it to Nike, and you see what we look like now. Because we let those jackasses get a hold of us. And one by one, they keep doing this to teams around the league, and it keeps getting worse and worse. Enough. Okay? So hopefully, Joel Glazer addresses this. We fix things. I don't mean we do something else even crazier. I mean, we go back to a classy, nice-looking uniform, and then we keep it for 30, 40 years the way every team should. With just, you can tweak the stripes. You can tweak this and that. You know, stuff like that. Evolutionary changes. Minor changes. We'll see about that. But I wanted to get that out there, too, on the show. I appreciate even those of you who I've insulted today for you for listening. I appreciate that. I want to thank our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford, as always. I want to thank the Joes for allowing me this platform to get in front of you on the best website on the web for Bucks coverage. I can't tell you how grateful I am every week to have this chance. And no matter what you're doing this weekend, enjoy it. It's the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and NCAA basketball. Baseball's back upon us. We're in some good sports times right now, despite no football. And, of course, we've got the draft in a few weeks. We'll be covering the hell out of that, as will everybody else. In the meantime, be safe this weekend. Enjoy all the things going on. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.